Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free.
Welcome, everyone. What a week this has been. Lie after lie after lie is being exposed. And we're going to talk about some of those lies today. The most critical one that I see is actually what is going on with the Arizona Dominion voting machines, where the people who are in charge, we have just found out, were never really in charge. Think about that. You don't have the password to your computer. What do? Somebody else has to open it. Somebody else gets to use it. Why is somebody else using that in an election? Well, it looks like once again, President Trump will be vindicated, although it's going to be a very bitter pill to swallow for the left, because I'm still reading articles that say the president is still talking about the idea that the election was fraudulent. Of course he is, because it was. And that is part of the plan. I hope you get a chance to listen to some of Mike Lindell and what he has been saying, because he has been exposing a lot. He put out a new movie, and I suggest that you all watch it if you have not. This is something that is so important. We are entering into an unprecedented time. What will happen once this election fraud is really exposed? Will they overturn the election? Big question mark. Will we have to wait and watch the Biden administration destroy America? Big question mark. Who knows? We are stepping into uncharted waters. And you're listening to Karen Schoen, and this is the prism of America's education. And everything does get funneled through education. That's one thing that you know for sure. But one of the things, the prime things that we have been looking at, is this green education that our kids seem to be getting about how they could actually control the weather. Really? You really think so? I used to tell my friends up north when it was in the middle of the blizzard, if you guys can control the weather, why don't you all get together, go outside and breathe and melt the snow? You can control it. That doesn't work that way. But we're fortunate tonight to have with us someone who has done investigating on that, Chris Wright. Chris, thank you so much for joining me today. And we have a full house. Thank you.
Karen, thanks for having me back.
It is always a pleasure. So what do you think about all this green gobbledygook that really is nothing more than how do we control the population and make them give up the things that they want and they need and feel guilty about having them?
Well, you and I have talked about climate change before and how bogus a theory it is. So let's look at some recent climate change stories and see what we get when we connect the dots. Leftists blamed a California wildfire last year on climate change, but it turns out it was purposely set to cover up a murder. Electric car batteries catch fire. Not even 10,000 gallons of water will put out the fire. Cost estimates for EVs typically leave out the cost of a home charging station, which can be more than $1,000. EVs also stop suddenly when they break down, causing a hazard to other motorists on highways, and many EVs cannot be towed. Wind turbines are networked and can be hacked. Adequate cybersecurity measures have not been developed and might prove cost prohibitive. Without fossil fuels, there is no wind energy. Fossil fuels are used in the production of steel, cement, and fiberglass, all of which are needed for wind turbines. Old wind turbine blades cannot be recycled, so they're sent to landfills. The rate of ice melt in Greenland sounds scary until you realize it's a return to normal after an unusually cool period starting in the 1950s. The claim that economic loss stemming from weather disasters is increasing has been debunked. The pattern of altering data to support the climate change narrative continues. The latest example is satellite data, which previously showed no global warming, but which now has been corrupted. They've corrupted the data. The Green New Deal would make America much more dependent on China for critical minerals. There are many good reasons not to go down that road. A German judge said it's time for really authoritarian measures and serious encroachments on fundamental rights to deal with climate change. Measures like curbing air travel and shutting down large parts of the economy permanently. Sig Heil, sign me up. Finally, people are out there pushing green energy when they hold green energy investments and profit from related activities. They stand to make money if the government skews public policy in favor of green energy and funds green energy projects with taxpayer money. The latest example is climate czar John Kerry. He was raking it in from green energy speaking fees, consulting fees, and board of director fees before going back into the government. Connect the dots and what do you get? Climate change activists wrongly blame everything on climate change. They have one-track minds and ignore other important considerations. They won't tell you the bad stuff or the true cost of their proposals. They believe the most fantastical things and shut out inconvenient realities because it's a fake religion. They lie, fake their data, and deliberately try to scare you to death. They're authoritarian and get their jollies from the prospect of controlling your life to the nth degree. They say stuff not because it's true, but because they will personally benefit financially. Like Lily Tomlin says, no matter how cynical I get, it's never enough. So if you think the planet is burning up and we're all going to die, it's time to rethink your position because you don't have a case.
You are so right. And the sad part is our kids have bought into this and their parents have bought into this. I wonder, Chris, if they realize how many products, as you were speaking, how many products need fossil fuels, how many products that we have that we wouldn't have. And maybe parents, grandparents should do a little takeaway with their kids. That might prove to them how important oil, fossil fuels have become, because they are the lifeblood of our economy. Imagine, take away your computer, take away your cell phone, take away your microchips, take away your glasses, take away your TVs, take away almost everything electronic, take away all those plastic materials. What are you left with? Well, we could always use paper. Well, doesn't that burn down the trees? Do you see where I'm going?
I do. And it's these kids are not getting the other side of the story. They're being indoctrinated. And it's very clever what the left has done in terms of indoctrination. Not only have they made their ideas nearly ubiquitous, every time you turn around, you bump into them, but they've managed to discredit anything coming from the other side, managed to discredit any contrary voices. So don't listen to those people because they're deplorable. And don't read anything they read because those sources are not credible. So this is very clever. Not only does the left get to pummel these kids with one point of view, but they manage to shut out any contrary view through these means.
Well, sometimes you have to play, you have to show by experimenting. And one of the best things that I did, and I can recommend that to anybody, when you sit down for dinner, fill up your glass with water and ice and ask your children, your grandchildren, if they think that by the time the ice melts, the water will spill out of the glass. Put a mark where the water line is. Put the glass down and let it melt. And lo and behold, they will discover that nothing has changed. The water level is still the water level. Well, there goes all those icebergs. The sea is not rising. It rises and falls. It's supposed to. That's the way it works. When you have gravity and you have the moon and you have the pull and you have evaporation. Did you notice, Chris, I never noticed in one of their articles that they ever addressed evaporation?
Well, I haven't focused in on that particularly, but these are the same folks that say follow the science all the time. And so when I learned recently that they're faking their data, well, we knew they were faking their data for a long time, but one thing that had always been a linchpin for my analysis of this subject was the satellite data. They removed some sensors from the Earth collecting temperatures around the world, and they left the ones near cities, which are naturally hotter. So that's how they can claim in recent years, these are the hottest years on record. Well, all the sensors in the cooler places disappeared. So no wonder the data is now skewed towards showing hottest years on record, blah, blah, blah. Well, contrary to all that was the satellite data, which showed no warming of the Earth in recent years and showed a pause for 20 years. And now to find out that they've gotten to those scientists and convinced them to fake that data, that's really quite disturbing.
It is very disturbing. And it is just another lie to add to the long list of lies of how to destroy America, because that's really what their goal is. And for that, they are attacking our children also with horrific lies. And this one I'm focused on is LGBTQ. Last week, we had one of the counties in Florida adopt an LGBTQ week. Why on earth would they be doing it to our children? We are seeing stories all the time of LGBTQ story hours. I was reviewing some of the materials that are in the media centers. I can't begin to tell you how many LGBTQ books there are for our kids to read. Why do you think this is happening, Chris?
Well, you mentioned earlier that they are attacking America through their climate change bogus narrative. Well, this transgender stuff is another way they're attacking America. If they can succeed in breaking everything down, basic given categories like male and female, then they will soften you up for accepting whatever garbage they want to spoon feed to you. So they are definitely attacking America through these narratives also. Now, I want to preface this commentary by saying that there have always been transgender people and nobody should hate them. I don't hate anybody, but it doesn't mean that they should be controlling public policy or that I have to like everything they say. So this has been in the news lately about transgender surgery for very young children. And I want to know if these people are really serious or are they just kidding? Because this is so obviously false, so obviously wrong. I don't know why these people continue to make headway with it. Now, Arkansas's governor vetoed a bill that would ban puberty blockers and sex change surgery for minors, but he expects the legislature to override his veto. I wrote this early in April. Nothing against transgender people, but the left is deliberately trying to create more of them by, among other things, teaching gender spectrum and gender fluidity in public schools. The result is social contagion, with more youngsters needlessly playing with matches, that is, with the notion they are a different gender. They are egged on by financially self-interested psychologists, surgeons, and other corrupt professionals who make up the transgender industrial complex. We don't allow six-year-olds to make life-altering decisions. We don't allow them to drive, gamble, or sign contracts. There's no reason we should allow gender dysphoric minors to take hormones or start sex change surgery because some psychiatrist wants to make a few bucks. There's no reason we should allow them to start this process with the help of public school officials without the parents even knowing about it. 6 and 8 year olds don't know their own minds. There's no reason to allow them to start a lifetime of powerful drugs or get irreversible mutilating surgery. Plenty of people who underwent this process ended up regretting their choices or realizing it was all completely delusional or even thinking of suicide. Just ask the 200 people who showed up at the world's first detransition conference in England in 2019. Just ask Nathaniel, who got the genitalia surgery and less than a year later said, "This whole thing was a bad idea. I am 19 years old and I feel as though I have ruined my life." Just ask Sydney. 2 years ago, I was a healthy, beautiful girl heading toward high school graduation. Before long, I turned into an overweight, pre-diabetic nightmare of a transgender man. I won't place the full blame on healthcare providers because I should have known better, but they sure helped me do a lot of harm to myself, and they made a hefty buck doing it. How many more stories like this do you need to hear before concluding that sex changes for minors are a really, really bad idea and should be outlawed? For every Nathaniel in Sydney, there are hundreds more who regret their choices and are seeking help to find their way back. As if all this were not enough, other dangers abound. A hormone blocker prescribed to transgender youth has been linked to over 6,000 deaths. I wonder if the corrupt professionals like Planned Parenthood, enabling all this, disclose that to their young charges, placing trust in their hands. To allow this is child abuse. This is why legislators in Arkansas and 8 other states are right to try to stop it. This is why parents in Wisconsin were right to file suit to block a school district from encouraging children to adopt transgender identities without notification to the parents. This is why Rand Paul was right to confront Biden nominee Rachel Levine over transgender surgery and drugs for young children. All the nominee said in response was that the matter could be discussed after confirmation. Well, I tried to contact Rand Paul after the confirmation and get him to put the question to Rachel Levine again. And I call on Rand Paul, who has not done this to this day, to my knowledge. I call on him again to confront Rachel Levine on this question, on this subject. Let's have this out and let's hear the far left crazies driving this and the transgender industrial complex defend the indefensible.
You're absolutely right, Chris. And this is unbelievably, to me, it is child abuse. A kid has no idea what they want to be. And to force them into something using drugs that they will have to use for the rest of their lives, I go back to follow the money. Who makes money from this? Planned Parenthood is making a boku fortune because they are administering these drugs. The pharmaceutical companies are making a boku fortune because they have created these drugs. And what do these drugs do? They alter your life for a lifetime. Unlike an abortion, which was a one-time, one-shot deal, Planned Parenthood will make a fortune forever living off of you. This has to be dealt with the right way. They always, every single communist, fascist ideology always starts with a very small percentage of the population. They isolate that percentage of the population and then use that population as a tool to go after the majority. Well, if they actually thought America was a democracy, which we all know it isn't, then majority should rule and these laws or these ideas should be put back where they belong, on the shelf, for a specialized conversation between an adult and a doctor, not a child. But as we have seen through the years, this is something that really follows along the lines of communism. When you are forcing people through lies and propaganda to think a different way than is normal, that's what this is all about. Side with me, you can think like this. Side with me, you can do that. This is exactly what communists do all the time. And whether they call them communist, fascist, totalitarian, their goal, it doesn't matter. Their goal is always the same: to destroy what is current so we can replace it with something different. We can replace it with our incredible utopia, which never exists. Did you ever see anything like that exist in any fascist or communist country that you have studied, Chris? Is it successful?
Well, I go back to the idea of the new Soviet man. They were going to remake and change human nature is what they were going to do. And they're going to end all human suffering and change human nature. And after a while, in fact, the theory got so crazy there that after a while, human beings would undergo, after generations of indoctrination, human beings would be altering their genetics so that they would be hardwired in the future to be the new Soviet man. So the theory gets pretty crazy. And it's my belief that we are on a road towards socialism in the United States, but it's going to take a different form. It's going to be American-style socialism, and it's going to look a little different than seizing the means of production. So I start with the idea that we have a realignment of the major political parties. Time was when the Republicans were the party of the rich and the Democrats were for the little guy. Now the reverse is true. Democrats are the party of the rich and the coastal elites, and the Republicans are the smelly Walmart people. According to IRS data, Democrats made up 2/3 of all taxpayer households with an income of $500,000 a year or more last year. 3/4 of taxpayers in Republican districts, meanwhile, had household incomes of less than $100,000. The richest counties in the country are all near Washington, D.C., and they're all Democrat, benefiting from the growth of government. Things have definitely flipped from 30 years ago. What's driving the change? Corporate fascism, that's what. Anyone on the left who still rants against the evil corporations is way behind the curve. The evil corporations are now your friends. All of corporate America has gone woke. People in the business world used to be reliable allies for freedom. Not anymore. Now they're on the left. They pontificate and work against common sense election safeguards like voter ID. They hire social justice artists to paint murals of burning buildings on their stores after being looted and burned themselves. They work hand in glove with government officials and Democrat campaign operatives to shut down the political right. This is the face of fascism, folks. The merger of big business and big government, just like in Mussolini's Italy. It concentrates too much power in too few hands, exactly what our founders warned us about when they created a constitution that dispersed power between separate branches of government and between the states and Washington. The founders knew from history what always happens if there is concentration of power. In short, King George dismissing their legislatures and putting troops in their living rooms to shut down dissent. My local chamber of commerce left small business owners behind a long time ago. Now it's all about government contracts and sucking at the government teeth. How long do you think Dagny Taggart would have remained a rugged individualist in Atlas Shrugged if most of the traffic on her railroad was from government contracts? Not long. We are headed to fascism. So my question for you is, why do you want to help the fascists take over absolutely everything? You heard Joe Biden previously, more government for this, more government for that, more government, more government, more government. All bow down and praise the government. Who benefits? The people who run the government and their rich crony friends who will get government contracts. That's who. Democrats, in other words. Maybe you're a Democrat and you think your party has discovered the magic formula, the magic money machine that will make you and your friends rich. Hate to break it to you, but it's not sustainable. We can't keep spending money we don't have to grow the government and enrich a tiny elite forever. If you are part of that elite, I defy you to justify what you are doing other than by just showing me your wallet. And if you're one of the smelly Walmart people like me, you need to learn how to organize and fight if you want to keep the budding fascists among us from taking all your freedom away from you.
Boy, you are so right. And I understand that you have somebody who has absolutely lived through this.
Yes.
Lilia Slavova has lived through communism. You have firsthand knowledge of how it works. Are you seeing the same things here in America that you saw when you left Bulgaria?
I'm seeing it through a different, of course, point of view. In a meeting a couple of weeks ago with Chris and other people that really want their voices to be heard, I've told them a simple story of how in 1986, when I arrived here on the 26th of July, as a political immigrant with a military plane from Germany, from Frankfurt, from your military base, my husband was already here too, weeks before me. He's also a political immigrant. He actually was working against our country on behalf of the Central Intelligence Agency. He greeted me arriving at Andrews Airport, and he said very quietly to my ear, considering the fact that he was only 2 weeks here, not speaking a word of English. And he said, Lilia, I'm afraid what I see now is happening. Socialism is coming. Where are we going to go next? We're talking 1986. That means that that man who was a visionary to start first, he was a disillusioned communist back in my country who turned against the system and helped the system collapse. It's one of those people that, you know, got an award from the American government and is very well recognized actually now with the new government in Bulgaria of what he's done. He saw it here. He was really a visionary. I really was not in a position to discuss what and how in details, but year after year, he kept pointing little details about our everyday life and how everything starts to remind him of how actually socialism came to Eastern Europe. I want to start with that.
It's so sad because I agree with you, and I was teaching, and in the 80s when I walked into the book room and could no longer get books that actually taught anything. And all I was finding were books that were talking about the collective and how everybody had to group together. And everything was becoming so confusing. I said, this is now the beginning. They are beginning to erase our history. When I saw that the math books no longer taught about economics, man, that was a clue for me to get out of Dodge. And then I became a mortgage broker, and I realized that the people who were buying houses had absolutely no idea how money worked because they were never taught in school. So this is not something that popped up all of a sudden. Your husband was absolutely right to be able to recognize it. And it was a very, very scary thing for me to actually see it happening. We are going to take a very short break. Please do not touch that dial, anyone, because we have much more to talk about. And we will be joined with Chris Wright, Lilia Slavova, and Alex Newman. This is Karen Schoen. You're listening to the Prism of America's Education. Do not touch that dial.
Is a record player the best way to listen to music? Of course not. So why are you still taking vitamins that haven't been upgraded since the 1930s? Even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it's time to upgrade to Healthy Cells pill-free, patent-pending microgel supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. They taste great, convenient on the go, and they're more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutloud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen. You're listening to The Prism of America's Education with my guests, Chris Wright, Lilia Slavovia, and Alex Newman. Lilia, I understand you were a teacher. I was a teacher also. Do you see a need to teach communism in school? Should our children be aware of it as a lifestyle, or should it be they be aware of it as a comparison to what America is about? We're supposed to be about.
I will start with first, you know, it's the common saying, know your enemies first, right? To know your friends later. We in my country, that was born so many years ago, we were taught socialism. We were taught communism. And we were, of course, brainwashed. We grew up of the knowledge of communism and socialism, but we also were taught capitalism. And the way we were taught capitalism, of course, was what not to like about capitalism. And here it's a matter of who writes the books, who teaches, how does it teach us, what does it give us. And luckily enough, I had great, fantastic teachers, because those teachers were capitalists before the system cut them. They were made to teach the socialism and communism, but they understood capitalism. Luckily, I was able to learn something from both sides. That's why, and then of course, my family and my family history helped me to understand, not to be completely brainwashed, not to become part of the communist party, not to be you know, in any, you know, forms and shape, being completely losing your mind over this. And that's why I took off, because I did not understand totally capitalism, but I knew what to expect. My point of it is that if books were written really in order to explain to the kids the difference between the systems, and tell them what is the basic, very basic things. I've been teaching middle schools, I've been teaching high schools, and people, and my kids also have asked me, I mean, I'm teaching acting and dramatic arts and, you know, language arts, but I've been asked about communism. I've been asked about, you know, what's the difference. And once I give them a simple idea that you have this beautiful big house and, you know, and beautiful big family, and the house is four bedrooms and four bathrooms, and all of a sudden the government decides that they can put three other families in this house, because that's what communism is. We all have to live in a commune. We all have to be equal. You know, everybody's got to be under the one roof. It doesn't matter that this house was built by your grandfather or grand-grandfather and the house worth millions. Who cares? The government installs those people there. My students, I remember, they were in shock. How come that can happen? Well, that's the whole purpose of our socialistic system. Take from the rich, give to the poor, everybody equal. That simple example, I guess, at least for my students, I was able to make it clear what it, in a very simplistic way, you know, looks like. And also one day, contributing, you know, the government was contributing to us who can earn what and how. We had a very famous saying, and Chris must have heard that. we pretend, the government pretends to pay us, and we pretend to work. It was very, very well known, yes, that nobody was working really hard during socialism.
Well, when you limit what a person can make and you don't reward them for being exceptional, which is what people really want, Everybody wants to be exceptional in something, and sadly, communism guides them into being exceptional visually, not with substance. So I just heard that the Biden is giving out grants for the STEM program to make sure that they teach social justice and diversity. Can you imagine where America's mathematicians and scientists and engineers and technical people, where they will be in the lineup of the world when it comes to new inventions and creativity, if everything is based on diversity? How is that possible? It won't be. So what we're doing is we're trading our children's future and guaranteeing that they will be a third world country. They won't be able to compete.
Yeah, it is very sad. We had this in my country also. If you are a son or a daughter of a blue worker, you get into college. If you're a son or a daughter of the partisan, somebody that, you know, fought for the communists to come, you will go to college and you will get the scholarship. Of course, our education was free, but to get to college was extremely difficult. And I came from a bourgeois family that were in jails, and, you know, I had zero chance. That's why I chose the arts. Mm-hmm. And that's the tendency I see here. That's one of the tendencies. Also, this, you know, the incredible things, what's happening with the books, why books were taken from the shelves for what, you know, this is really mind blowing to me. I don't even have words for it.
Well, they believe that opposition is their worst enemy, so therefore everything must always carry the same message. And the books that they took didn't carry their talking points. And it also showed that America was not a racist country, which is what they absolutely cannot tolerate anybody saying. Because I believe that under the communism that you experienced, it was class warfare. You had the people that were rich against the people that were poor. In America, it was hard to bring in communism that way because rich people were black and white and Hispanic. It didn't make any difference. So they had to, instead of making it class warfare, they had to make it visual and make it a race warfare so that the races would clash, whereas in Bulgaria, the classes clashed.
Yeah, wow. One thing which I want to make a point to earlier, something that Chris was talking, maybe this is something unknown for you guys, but in my country, and I'm talking only in Bulgaria, actually, none of what you, Chris, were talking about, transgender and gay and lesbians and whatever, I'll call it, you know, in simple words, they were not tolerated. I don't know if that was absolutely not. Absolutely. One of my best friends was gay, and we were covering for him and covering for him and covering for him. And he suffered tremendous. It was actually, I don't know if that was something left a little bit from the fascism we had, because our culture went through from one, you know, from one to another, but that was absolutely not tolerated at all.
Imagine that. So they had to change it to make it tolerated. And that's, I believe, why they are doing this, just to create the division and again, change the history. What do you think, Chris?
Change the history. That's the whole thing. And that's why there needs to be education around the subject of communism. And a very exciting thing happened in the state of Florida this year. There was a bill to do exactly that, to require instruction on the subject of communism in public schools. And that bill, unfortunately, did not get out of the legislature. There was a House version. It's very short. It says to provide at least 45 minutes of instruction on Victims of Communism Day on topics such as Mao Zedong in China, Joseph Stalin in the Soviet Union, et cetera, et cetera, and how the victims suffered under these regimes through suppression of speech, poverty, starvation, migration, and systemic lethal violence against citizens. That was the House bill, short and sweet. Unfortunately, the Senate bill added a bunch of stuff about Juneteenth holidays and slavery and emancipation. And then it went into a section that was exactly the same as the House bill, but then it added a bunch of whereas clauses. Very strange. I had never seen this in a bill. That made it look like a resolution instead of a bill, but they added all these whereas clauses, and then they stopped. That was it. That was the end of the bill. So the House version was different from the Senate version. The legislature adjourned without taking further action. So unfortunately, this bill did not go anywhere this year, but people need to agitate and work for it, bring it back next year and get it passed next year.
Yeah, well, sadly, unfortunately, that's the way some of our Florida legislators work. They will pass something in the House, and all of a sudden it'll die in the Senate. Next year, they'll bring it up in the Senate, and it'll be wonderful, and they'll pass it, and then it'll die in the House. And this way, they can say they voted for it. So, unfortunately, but is that bill really needed? Because Florida has a statute, and that statute is part of the criminal code, and it's 876.01, and it prohibits the teaching of communism as an ideology in Florida schools, as a mechanism to overtake. So communism, I agree with you, should be taught. I remember when I was teaching, I made columns on the board, and the kids made columns in their book, and we listed every single type of government, and then we compared them. That's what school is supposed to do. Unfortunately, we know that that does not happen in our schools at all. Chris, you're absolutely right. This is a bill that needs to come back, but I think it needs more than one day.
Well, let's see what Alex has to say about it. I'm really interested to see what he has to say about this bill.
Yeah, well, thank you, guys. I appreciate the opportunity to chime in on this. It is a very important bill. Actually, I went to a Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation training program up in Washington, D.C., where they talked about this. And it was news to me that American children didn't learn about communism or the history of communism. I teach in a private school, and I teach economics, so all of my children learn about the history of communism, about the failures of central planning. And to me, that's a no-brainer. No person can consider themselves properly educated if they don't know at least the basics of communist history, communist theory, and I think it's essential. I'm amazed that they weren't able to get this bill passed. You'd think that'd be a pretty easy no-brainer, especially in the state of Florida, where we've got so many people who have fled from communist tyranny, particularly the million Cubans that we have in South Florida. I mean, even in our big cities, that would be a very popular bill. So it's unfortunate that it did not pass, but it's essential that children know these things. That old cliche about history repeating itself is absolutely true. If people don't know the history of communism, if people don't know the truth about it, then they become easy victims of snake oil salesmen who come along and tell them that communism will solve their problems, communism is going to lead to a utopia. But of course, if they knew that history, that would never happen. So incredibly important bill. I hope Floridians will really make a serious push for this next year or the next time the legislature meets. I believe that's next year. And so if you're in Florida and you're listening to this, make a phone call to the office of your state representative and your state senator and let them know that you think this is important, that you know our children need to know this. It's just simply a no-brainer. So.
Right. And I believe Lilia said in the beginning, the best way to understand, you've got to know your enemy. You have to know who you're fighting. Otherwise, what are you fighting? There's nothing to fight if you don't know who the enemy is. And the enemy is not other Americans. The enemy are the communist globalists who are involved in an ideology that wants to destroy America. Make no mistake, they hate us. They want us gone. And shows like this would have a limited lifetime, I would say, if we don't do something in 10 years, we'd never be able to have a show like this where we would be talking against the government. Just think about China and what's going on in China. You talk about the government, you wind up in a gulag. Chris, I'm going to deflect to you and Alex, because I would like to know what one of the things that we did in Florida this year I'd like to share with everyone. And that is that we revised our standards, and we also passed a bill called H.R. 5, which said that a civics education, a true American civics education, must be taught in America's schools. And yet we have found that through deceptive words and all kinds of euphemisms and synonyms, we wind up back in the same spot with critical race theory. So I'd like to know your take and Alex's take on critical race theory and good explanation so people really understand what it is all about.
Okay, I'll go first. I'll give you a little bit of background, the skinny on critical race theory, but let me preface my remarks by saying you were talking about civics in Florida. I want to mention that the National Association of Scholars has a Civics Alliance initiative going. They've got five model bills. You might look at them for Florida. One of them has to do with teaching traditional American values in the civics classes instead of woke civics. Another bill has to do with not turning students into social justice warriors and requiring them to do service hours for their civics class for left-wing causes. So there are three more bills. Might take a look at that for Florida. Now, critical race theory is an outgrowth of critical legal studies, which has Marxist roots. Critical race theory ultimately derives from critical theory, which came from the Frankfurt School, a group of theorists pushing the cultural Marxism of Antonio Gramsci. Critical race theory holds that racism is ingrained in the fabric of American society and that institutional racism is pervasive in the dominant culture. These power structures are based on white privilege and white supremacy, which perpetuate the marginalization of people of color. Thus, critical race theory condemns the U.S. and all white people as inherently racist and evil. Critical race theory is all about structural racism. Structural racism theory holds that any disparity of outcome between groups in health, income, education, etc., is due to racism, not personal choices or any other factor. Structural racism theory is all about erasing disparities. And look at these policy prescriptions that come out of this crowd. They want to wipe out all disparities by authoritarian collectivist means. This would mean, for starters, society leveling rates of taxation of 60 to 80% to fund all kinds of redistribution to favored groups. And let me just finish by saying that critical in this sense does not mean analytical thinking. It means criticizing everything and tearing everything down until nothing's left. Again, they soften you up for the program they want to deliver to you. And that's what cultural Marxists seek to do. And with that, I'll hand it off to Alex about critical race theory.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. And I did just write an in-depth piece on critical race theory and its invasion in our public schools for the Epoch Times. So people can find that at theepochtimes.com. This is essentially a communist tool to divide our nation and divide us and split us up, and then use that as a tool to bring about really civil war, maybe not necessarily with guns yet, but ultimately that's the objective. And Karen, you actually hit on something really, really important. They figured out early on that class warfare was not going to be an effective technique. So communist theorists have been thinking about how do we bring communism to all these nations for over 100 years. And what worked in Russia and the Soviet Union ultimately would not work in the United States. In fact, it wouldn't even work in Western Europe. And so they put their minds together and said, why isn't this working? So, well, they've got, you know, their poor people are richer than our rich people. Their poor people are doing, you know, significantly better than what used to be our middle class here. So, and there's a lot of mobility. And Americans have historically understood that if you work hard and dedicate yourself to serving others, supplying the needs and the wants of consumers, you can succeed in this country, or at least you could before big government destroyed the economy. So that wasn't an effective tactic. So they went back to the drawing board and figured out that race would be a much more useful tool. Now, for communists, as the Students for a Democratic Society used to say back in the 1960s, the issue is never the issue. Right? So the issue is not really racism. It's not really global warming. It's not really feminism or any of these things. The issue is how can we advance the revolution, right? That's always the issue from their perspective. So critical race theory is one of these issues that is useful to advance the revolution. So the Bible teaches that a kingdom divided against itself cannot stand, right? A house divided against itself cannot stand. And so they come in and they say, oh, we're going to divide you all into two different categories, the oppressor and the oppressed. Now, critical race theory holds that on the oppressive side are all people who happen to be of European heritage. On the oppressed side are all others, just because it was just a logical dividing line for America. It's not to say there were never any issues with racism or anything, but it just was a logical dividing line. At this point, you've got, you know, a slight majority for people of European heritage, but that is quickly declining, and eventually they won't be in the majority anymore. So that's not really the issue. What they've done is they've put everybody else in this coalition called BIPOC, the Black, Indigenous, and People of Color, which is itself a strange amalgamation. And I'll start off by saying that as a Christian, you know, race is not really a valid issue for me. The Bible, I look through the Bible, and there's not a single mention to race in the sense that the critical race theorists or the racists use it today. So as far as I'm concerned, that's not a real phenomenon. But we need to talk about it in terms of the critical race theory. And I think the most insightful thing that I have heard about this came from a very wonderful woman that I interviewed for my article. She and I actually serve on a few boards together. Her name is Lily Tang Williams. She grew up in China under Chairman Mao. And what she said is exactly what you guys are doing here with the critical race theory, Chairman Mao was doing in China. So basically they herded all these children into these indoctrination centers that they labeled public schools. And then they divided the children up into two classes. They had the black classes and the red classes. The red classes were the revolutionary soldiers, the landless peasants, the workers, the communists, etc. And you were born into the red classes. And unless you switched and turned against the revolution, you were, by definition, one of the oppressed. If you were in the black classes, that was the landowners, the business people, the Christians, the counter-revolutionaries, people who were stuck to the old ideas in China. Then you were part of the black class, and you could not scrub that off. And so what they would do is they'd get the little children to stand up in front of the class, and they would do what Mao called self-criticism. So the children from the black classes would have to go up there and denounce their parents and denounce their families and denounce their privilege, just exactly what we're seeing today. And she said it didn't take long before these children in the black classes were turning their parents over to the communist government to be tortured and murdered. It didn't take long before the blood started flowing and tens of millions of people were murdered. And so critical race theory does much the same thing. As Chris mentioned, it's a subset of critical theory, and so it's not the only factor at work right now. Now they're telling people, for example, that if you're a man who understands that you're a man, you have cisgender privilege. If you're attracted to people of the opposite sex, then you have heteronormative privilege. If you are not handicapped, then you have ability privilege. If you're Christian, you have Christian privilege. So they're dividing society up into two overall classes, the oppressor and the oppressed. And the hope is that in the ensuing war, and it may be a real war, it may not be, but in the ensuing chaos, the communists will rise to power. And we've seen this over and over and over again in different nations. It's incredibly dangerous. The last thing they want is for Americans to be united as Americans. And that's what really needs to be our goal, in my opinion.
I could not agree more. We need to come together as Americans, because if we put America first, we would actually be the biggest block of free people. And right now, for a very short window, we are more than they are. There are a lot more of us than there are of them, but it's up to us to educate the people. And right now, the people are ignorant because the media, Hollywood, and schools have come together to carry the same message. One of the things that I will caution you all, when you hear their message, think the opposite. Whatever they say you're doing, whatever they're blaming on us, think that's exactly what they are doing. And they are the ones that are spewing these lies. Lilia and Chris and Alex, I wanted to thank you. And Chris, you had something?
I've got three quick points if there's time, Karen.
quick.
Okay, well, we're in about the 12th iteration of this dividing people up by race. There was a former communist who wrote in the 1940s, a black man, wrote a book called Color Communism, and I'm forgetting the rest of the title, but
Common Sense,
that's it. And this is not new. We're in the 12th iteration. It's much more sophisticated now. Now, Alex said the issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. I'm going to cut right to the bottom line. The issue is never the issue. The issue is always wealth and power for a tiny elite, because a tiny elite is going to end up running any system that's going to come out of critical race theory if it's ever institutionalized. And finally, I wrote a report in 2011 on structural racism. I said this is coming. It was in civil rights legal circles. It was soon to invade public thought, general thought. And I was right about absolutely everything, except I thought it would take 25 years. It only took 9. And here we are. And I fought the political right for not standing up to it back when it was first percolating.
Unfortunately, I believe they were part of it, and they would never stand up to something they were part of because they feel they will be the elite. They haven't read their history. They don't know that they are the first crowd to go. But that's another story. Folks, I want to thank Chris and Alex and Lilia for joining me today. Please, Chris, where can people find you?
The daily commentaries are on my personal website, liberato.us, L-I-B as in boy, E-R-A-T as in Tom, O.us. Lilia is a valued member of my Anti-Communism Action Team Speakers Bureau. That's at spiderinthefly.com with dashes between the words, spider dash, etc. Alex has collaborated with us before. He's in one of our videos on education. So we're always glad to have Alex back with us.
Yes, Alex is a writer and he writes. Alex, you have a new website. What is your new website?
Thank you so much, Karen. It's a pleasure to be with you. I've got several. Public School Exit is a new organization we just formed recently. My personal website is libertysentinel.org. I'm the senior editor at the New American Magazine. I'm a contributor to the Epoch Times, and I write for probably half a dozen other publications. And thank you once again, Karen. Really appreciate your show. And thank you, Chris. And all that you guys do is just phenomenal. So thank you.
Well, it's our job to be the information warriors. But as I learned at our last conference, everyone had the same message. And that message is, if you have information and you don't use it, shame on you, because knowledge without action is meaningless. So, folks, we have to act. And I would suggest that you go to the Florida Citizens Alliance website. If you do not understand what is going on, take a look at the school books that your children are reading. If you are reading the Hoof Mifflin Harcourt series going by the name of HMH, no matter what words they use, they all boil down to the same thing. Your children are being taught critical race theory. By the end of their years in school, they will hate you. They will hate their government. They will hate their country. They will hate God. And more than likely, they will hate themselves, which is, to me, the saddest part. So with that in mind, please come back and we will see you again next week. Again, go to GoFLCA. Look at the open letter to Governor DeSantis to get rid of these textbooks. They have come in under stealth ideas, and they are teaching critical race theory, the same thing we have been talking about here. That is GoFLCA. Sign the petition and send your own governor a letter. Just because it's in Florida, we share. That's what Americans do. Thank you all for listening. This is Karen Schoen, and we will be back again next week. You're listening to The Prism of America's Education. But I'll always stand proud and free. I'm American.